again. It's been 6 months, and we are back. Welcome to the new iteration of what was once called the Got Game podcast, and what is now, for all intents and purposes, called Gaming in the Six, I guess? I guess.
I'm still here for Game Got.
Game Got, that's right. I am your host, Christine Chev. With me today is Momin Qureshi.
Hello.
And Steve Lung.
Hey, what's going on?
Holy crap, we're back.
Indeed.
How's everybody been the last, 6 months?
good. Myself buried under a pile of news, so I'm very, very happy to be talking video games and something that isn't crazy election stuff or news-related stuff, and just have a little fun talking video games, which is what I love to do.
I work at Sportsnet, so I always deal with fun stuff. It's all good for me.
Well, la-dee-da-si.
I mean, like, the Raptors are not particularly fun. That's what my main beat is. So, yeah.
Well, welcome back to the show, listeners. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for, like, joining us again. It's super nice to be back on the air again, and we hope that you are gonna tune in and listen. You know, we had our lovely long-running 8 years with Sportsnet. So this is our brand new venture, and you can find us, of course, on the Gaming in the Six page, which is gamingin6.com, and we will also have this up on SoundCloud and eventually up on iTunes. We're getting that all ready. So if you want to continue to enjoy our quips and musings about video games, then do that. We are all still on the social media. I am still at Christine Chubb. Momin, you are still Momin680?
Yeah, Momin680 News, yeah.
And Steve, I can never remember what yours is.
My Twitter handle is still my last name, Lung, L-O-U-N-G, underscore S. Really easy.
you may have noticed that there are two voices missing. Unfortunately, our darling Patrick will not be joining us this season. I think we can bring him back, like, maybe periodically. I think we can convince him to come on the show from once or twice.
Yeah, like he kind of told us that he won't be able to do it on a regular clip like us, but I feel like, you know, when
the day one DLC drops, you know.
Yeah, Patrick will be back, or something big happens in the PC world, I feel like he'll probably want to throw in his two cents, and we've told him the door is always open. So, you know, he left once before we brought him back. He left again. We'll probably bring him back.
And Colin is still part of the show. He just couldn't be on it today. We will, going forward in the future, hopefully have him join us.
I mean, I think the main thing to say here is that, like, when we wrapped up Got Game and we were told that our show was coming to an end, a lot of people, I think to our kind of surprise and kind of heartwarming, told us that they loved the show and they wanted us to keep going, and really kind of implored us to do something and carry it forward. And we were like, we're going to take some time to figure out what that is. I didn't think it would take us 6 months to figure it out, but we did. And we kind of sat around and tossed around ideas. And this is kind of what we've come up with. And I think it's going to be a lot of what you heard on Got Game over 10 years, but also some new stuff. We're going to try to branch out a little bit and do some other stuff. And so hopefully if you like the old show, you'll dig the new show, and you'll keep listening as we go along, and we'll keep it fun and easy and light, and talk some video games as well as some other stuff. And hopefully those who wanted us to carry on will be happy that we are keeping on.
That's well said.
Oh, thank you.
Well, that's the show there.
All right. Thanks for tuning in.
We're done. Goodbye.
Our old format was news, reviews, interviews. But I think we're also trying to keep it just a little more chattier this time.
I think we all want to dive a little bit more into pop culture a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we were part of the old network there, we kind of had a mandate to keep it as close to video games and some sports stuff as possible. But now that we're kind of a little open and on our own, we're a little bit more free to talk about a lot of stuff. So if you thought we tangented before, strap yourself in, because that stuff is coming even more so. But yeah, I mean, we want to talk more about, like, movies and TV shows and other stuff. And so, you know, I think we're trying to keep it free and not as bound by format. And so hopefully it'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely still talk about video games, though.
Of course.
Like, absolutely.
That is the staple of what we do.
Yeah. So, but just from time to time, if you want to know what we think about, like, Avengers or something on Netflix, we'll probably tell you.
Or say Deadpool 2 that just came out that I still haven't seen for some reason.
I haven't seen it yet either, but obviously we've all seen Infinity War, right? Except for Christine, because she hates the MCU.
You're right. I haven't seen it.
How have you not seen it yet? That's preposterous.
I'm still like 5 movies behind, and it's just...
Oh my God.
My theory was always like, if a friend wants to come and like say, hey, Christine, let's go to the movies, great, I'll go, and I'll try and figure out what's going on. But in general, I thought, well, it just wasn't on the top of my list. I mean, yeah.
You're going to go see the Han Solo movie, right?
Solo. I've heard some not great things about it, which makes me a little concerned, but...
If you want to start off our first episode with hot takes, get ready, because here comes one. I am, like, so not at all excited for this movie. Like, not even... The only thing that has me even remotely interested in watching Solo is Donald Glover's Lando. That's it.
Wow. I'm pretty stoked. It's Star Wars. I'm, like, 100% in for this.
Wow. Well, you go see it and let me know how awful it is.
Wow. They're like, just zero faith, huh? Zero
faith. You know what? I'm expecting something that's probably, like, okay. You know, it's probably going to be like, that was an okay, fun movie. But, I mean, it's a Star Wars movie. It's supposed to be more than that.
It's just a side story. It's not a numbered Star Wars movie.
Yeah, but it's a Han Solo. It's Solo. Like, Solo. Yeah. Like, that... Solo. Like, I can't say it even more. Like, the level of importance that Han Solo has in this universe is, like, kind of a big deal.
You were just saying Solo the way Tom Haverford says Genuine on Parks and Rec when Anne doesn't know who Genuine is. It's like, Genuine? Genuine. Genuine. just keep saying Solo.
I got faith.
Well, I'm glad you do, Steven. I mean, sincerely, go out and enjoy it. I hope it's good. I just, I don't know, man. I'm a little lukewarm on this Solo idea. I'll see it eventually. Well,
I don't know. I don't want to make of you haters. We should just rename this podcast now to the haters half hour of power.
I think that's just called the internet. Well, there is a lot of video game stuff coming up, Christine. Where do you want to take us to start?
I have been, after my many, many rants for Xbox in the previous year, see my rant-filled final show or second final show of Got Game, where I just went on a tirade about Microsoft. This
that was pretty amazing.
Absolutely loved them.
How
right?
infuriated I was. This week, I did something a little bit crazy, and I bought a PS4.
Woo! Welcome to the PS4 world.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
And I bought it for one game specifically. No, not God of War, but for Detroit Become Human.
That's not outlandish to buy a console for just one game, but why this game?
You know what? I was so excited for this game. I really liked Heavy Rain a lot. I wasn't the biggest fan of the one with...
Beyond Two Souls.
Beyond Two Souls. I wanted it to be better than it was, and I was just kind of let down. But there was something about Detroit Become Human that I was just like, yeah, I need to play it. I need to play it.
Christina, I like you, I'm a fan of what Quantic Dream does, and we've been seeing trailers for this game for like a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. I think it was a couple of E3s ago when we kind of got our first eyes on it, and then we didn't know when it was coming, and it was like a long wait, but it looks... As with everything with Quantic Dream, it looks like they're kind of pushing the envelope and trying something different, and it looks super interesting.
The good people of Sony, I've been chatting with them because E3 is just around the corner, so I've been kind of in chit-chats about, you know, setting things up, and I happened to mention that I was really excited for Detroit Become Human, and they said, hey, well, would you like to play it ahead of time? And I was like, yes, I would! Thank you very much. So I went to the store like the next day and bought a PS4 so I could play this game.
See, Sony, that's your marketing plan. Give out free codes to games and people will buy your system. That's how it works.
Yeah, so I've been playing it for the last like 5 or 6 days and it's kind of great. Like, if you liked Heavy Rain, I know that some people didn't, but a lot of people did.
I loved it.
True story, I actually gave my copy to a guy I used to work with, and he handed it back the next day saying, I'm not playing this game.
What?
He didn't want to hear Jason.
Jason!
Sean!
surprisingly, no. No, he quit after like 4 hours. He's like, nope, this game isn't for me.
Wow. Heavy Rain came out early, or not early in the PlayStation 3 run,
mid PS3 era, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it was early when I had my PS3, and I put it in, and I'd never really played a game like that before, and I was like, yo, this game is wild, man. It's so different.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Detroit Become Human takes a lot of the things that you really liked from Heavy Rain and continues that kind of narration path. Like, I have talked to two people who have also been playing this game for the last week, and we have had vastly different stories to tell. Like, their version of what has happened in the game is completely different from mine, other than the fact that there is a story about androids. Like, that's basically all the similarities we have.
Let's be honest, Christine, you're taking all the immoral choices, aren't you?
I tried to take the moral high road for as long as the game could let me, and then I just couldn't tolerate it anymore. I was like, nope.
I was going to say, set it up for us. What's the story here?
All right. So you play as three robots, basically. Two of them are house robots, so they're there to serve humans. And the third one is a police robot. So his job is to find out why some of the robots are becoming sentient. The story is done in like a series of different vignettes with three different characters. You've got Connor, the police robot. You've got Marcus, the house servant. And then you've got Kara, basically she's a maid is what she starts, what she first kicks off as. So each vignette is their little story, is a part of their story. And it all leads up to, depending on what your gameplay is, it could lead up to a revolution. It could lead up to nothing. It could lead up to destruction. Like, this game ends in so many different ways. Like, at the end of each segment, it shows you, you can look at how you've done or the choices you've picked compared to the rest of the world. Very similar to something you would see at the end of a Telltale game, where it's like, here's what your friends picked. Here's what you picked. And there were times where, granted, I mean, not as many people are playing it yet because it hasn't come out. It comes out today. But there were times where literally like 1% of people playing picked the way that I had picked. Like, it was so small, because one or two choices can change the entire game. It's like an ultimate choose your own adventure novel, which is both good and bad, because sometimes the story went in a way that I really didn't want it to go because I had made one simple decision. And once you make that decision, you can't go back. Like, it's, no, you are down that path and this is what is happening, and you kind of have to accept that, which can be frustrating when, you know, when you really wanted the story and your character to go this way, and you kind of have to adjust your own mindset and be like, oh no, you've done that and you screwed that over, so this is happening. Especially when it involves something really, like, terrible or dramatic to happen to one of the three main characters. It's quite the ride, you know. It's very emotional at times. It's, the undercurrent of it is obviously slavery and the reluctancy to accept the fact that technology has been evolved. And, you know, it's got lots of layers to the story where you can look at it in a very time-sensitive kind of way, where it's very relevant to what's going on today. It's very relevant to what happens in the 70s. It's very interesting to see how they've managed to not be preachy about it, but at the same time be like, these are what's happening, and this is something that these three characters have to deal with. And to have somebody like Connor, where at times in the game you can choose to play him really straight-lined, so you have to play a really, like, one-note conservative type character who has one goal, and then you've got two other characters who are who can be from mid-range to complete left-wing type characters. And it's very emotional. It's very, you know, I've said for ages now that the thing missing, especially on the Xbox console, is the fact that there's no good narrative-driven stories. And this has kind of proved my point. Like, the first game that I pick up for PlayStation, and it's one of the most engaging narratives I've played in quite some time.
All right, so like, it sounds very, very similar to, like, or just from a narrative perspective to, like an Isaac Asimov kind of novel. I'm not sure how familiar you are with his novels, but, like, is it kind of like that iRobot sort of feel?
Yes, it can be very easily compared to iRobot.
Is Will Smith in it?
Will Smith is not in it, but...
Well, I don't know about this game.
It's over. I'm done. I'm not playing it. No, but there are a few familiar faces, actually. I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy who played Bishop in Aliens is in it, and I thought that was delightful.
One more question. Yes. Like, you obviously talked about the narrative side, and like all three of us are familiar with what Quantic Dream is capable of. We pretty much played all their games.
Yes.
But from a gameplay perspective, I think that's what frustrated people the most about Heavy Rain, is that like at times it doesn't feel like you're playing a game when you're playing Heavy Rain. You're just like watching cutscenes, basically.
Yeah, that's pretty similar on this one as well. The game is largely based up of QuickTime events, but there's actually the transition from actual gameplay to cutscenes is really seamless, and there were times where I was waiting for the cutscene to keep going and I was like, oh no, wait, this is me, I'm doing something now. So it's a lot of like exploring. So it's a lot of walking, pressing X, walking, pressing X. There were a few interesting puzzle solvings, which I'm always a huge fan of. So as a robot, there were times where you had to look at different ways to accomplish your mission. And because you were a robot, you could actually run simulations. And so I thought that was a kind of a more interactive way to do it, because you could try to figure out which way you were going to go. But yeah, if you're looking for like really fast paced gameplay, you're probably going to be pretty disappointed, because it is largely QuickTime things where you're just walking around and having a lot of conversations. So it's not the most energetic of games, I'll say.
It very much is a Quantic Dream's product, basically.
Oh yeah, they are not leaving their genre. They are fully engulfed in their genre, and this is another example of just the kind of work that they do. They're not swaying in any way.
Okay.
I remember in Heavy Rain, there was a few moments that really made me kind of like sweat it out and feel like, you know, it was really, you know, like the scene where the guy, he has to cut off his own finger, and the scene where he's crawling through the glass and stuff like that. Like that was like one of the few times in video games where I was really kind of like intensely feeling it. Do you have similar moments like that in this game where you're like so invested that you're like, you know, shaking and sweating or feeling certain things?
I would say feeling certain things, yes. I found personally the intensity of what were some really pivotal scenes. For some reason, I felt like there was something missing at times where I felt that the game wanted me to feel a certain way, and I felt it somewhat, but I thought that it needed to be more impactful, and I don't know what they could have done differently to make it more impactful. Like, I was really connected to the characters, but I found when certain pivotal scenes happened, I was like, okay, that happened, that kind of sucked, or that was great. Let's move on with it. But there were some very, like, especially with the Kara character, the Kara robot, who basically, not to spoil too much of the game, depending on obviously what happens in your game, you take on a young girl and you basically become her surrogate mother. So that's obviously going to draw the most emotional connection for me as a woman, and maybe just in generally as a gamer, because you have that constant need, I felt, to protect this one character. So there was definitely scenes in there where I felt tense, but I also felt that there were times where maybe it's because I played a lot of Quantic Dream games in the past, I kind of knew how to get out of some situations that could have ended up very bad. I feel the same thing is like when you play a Telltale game, where you kind of know the patterns of like, okay, if I do this, chances are I'll probably get a positive result. Sometimes it doesn't work, but most of the time it does. So in that way, it was a little anticlimactic in a certain part, but in no way did I feel unattached to these characters. Like, there were times where I purposely thwarted some of the main characters' missions to benefit the side characters, which is something I've really never done in a game before, where I was like, no, I'm purposely going to sway this one character who I'm manipulating into for the benefit of this other side character.
All right, one last question on this, but like, one of the Quantic Dream kind of trademarks is their insane over the top moments. I always think back to Fahrenheit or Indigo Prophecy, when for some reason it turned into like an insane, almost Dragon Ball Z alien flying Superman fight, right? And then heavy rain. That like there's some of the alternate endings that can get like really really strange and wacky with who the origami killer is and things of that nature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in Detroit, like how over the top is it, or how over the top can things get?
In my playthrough, things didn't get too over the top. I think really the over the topness in this game comes from just how terrible the humans are, and like just pointing the camera at the way that humans treat the robots. It's more of a tension filled exploration depending on which character you are, where it's kind of like everything seems like it could really be happening. Like if your character dies in this game, it literally dies. That story is over. You don't get to play that rest of that story for the rest of the game. So,
that's really cool.
Yeah. So
I like that a lot.
So the tension is pretty heavy duty at times. I found like that kind of really ridiculousness wasn't there as much. It was more just a sad commentary on how easily humans can just be really terrible to sentient robots and just in robots in general, and how, you know, easy it is to be a terrible human being when you're given kind of carte blanche to do whatever you want to a robot who looks like a human. Like it can bring out kind of the worst in humanity. But I also feel like this is a game where a million other things definitely happen in this game that I didn't get to play. I feel like you could probably play this game 15 times and get a completely different outcome each time. So in general, yeah, if you like the Quantic Dream type games, I think you're really going to enjoy this one. There's lots of different things to explore and terrible aspects of humanity to rage against. And I liked it. I mean, I'm not upset that I went out and bought a whole new console just to play this game. I'm going to give it, out of 5, I think it's a solid 4.
4 out of 5. There
yeah.
we go.
Yeah.
First official score on 2.0.
Woo! Yeah, I'm going to have a full write-up on this on the website as well. So,
you know, I haven't honestly fired up my PS4 in a while, but there's a couple of games now that really have caught my eye that I'm thinking, maybe I'll go out and get them and refire up my PS4.
What were those?
Yeah.
Well, Detroit and Steve, God of War.
Yes, God of War. I mean, we're obviously because of how it was the timing of us launching this, but the entire world has played God of War at this point, and everyone absolutely loves it. And
not me. Clearly, I'm not part of this world.
Well, you just need to play your PS4 like the from a console perspective, there's no reason to not play PS4 because the Switch is a handheld console to me.
Right.
Yeah. but God of War, you've probably seen all over your Twitter timelines, all over the internet. It is a very 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 good game. Make no mistake about this. But the one caveat I have with this is that, like, I don't think I liked it quite as much as everyone else seems to have liked it.
Really?
And yeah. And I think the main reason for this is because I really, really, really loved, like, the original God of Wars. Like, I absolutely adored God of War 3. It's like the kind of the last one of like the Greek pantheon.
That to me is like one of my favorite games of all time, God of War 3. I love that game so much.
Yeah, but what I really like about the God of War series and what everyone else did not seem to like was the combat in the original God of War series. I love combo-based combat systems, and I love the fact that I could like basically get an infinite combo going and just get tons of experience and max out Kratos super, super quickly because I kind of completely rewarded my ability to play the game. So my main gripes with this new God of War as good as it is, like Christine, you want to talk about narrative-based games? God of War now is more of a narrative-based game than it is a balls-to-the-wall action game.
That's good, because I played the last God of War, and I did not like it.
but you see, like, this is my problem with it, because, like, so essentially they completely changed the combat of the original God of War. So in the old ones, everything was mapped to the face buttons, like square for light attacks, triangle for heavy attacks. And then you can switch weapons on the fly, and you can kind of rotate between four weapons by kind of switching with your D-pad. So if I remember correctly, like, this game, there are two weapons, or technically three weapon types that you have. So, like, you have the axe, which everyone knows, and spoiler alert, you do get the Blades of Chaos back in the game as a second weapon, and then the third one is going barehanded. And this all sounds really cool, but, like, I just didn't like the combat, because it felt more like Assassin's Creed combat, because, like, it's mapped to the trigger buttons, where, like, with, like, R1 is light attack, R2 is heavy attack, and I hate the camera in the game, like, for combat. The camera is, like, so drawn into Kratos. And for, like, a melee combat where with, like, enemies that are swarming around you, like, you want the camera more drawn back, like the way it was in the original games, so you can better kind of visualize information and figure out how exactly you want to tackle things. And then probably the biggest thing in combat is, like, it's just not violent enough anymore.
that really is saying something with a God of War game, because those games are hella violent, and that's part of what, like, it's not just that they're violent, but the kind of crazy,
it's not over the
ways.
Top violent, it's not, yeah, it's not as crazy over the top violent anymore, and like, that's what that to me is what I loved about it. And, like, I guess it's because, like, from a narrative perspective, Kratos just isn't as angry anymore. I mean, he's a dad now. And it kind of really shows, because, like, he's, like, kind of lame now. Like, I miss the old angry, like, rah, I'm gonna kill everything, Kratos. Like, I understand he's trying to repent and everything from a narrative perspective, but I don't like that. I don't like this new Kratos at all. I miss the old I'm gonna murder everything in my path, Kratos.
Are you saying he's become soft since he's become a dad?
Yeah, actually, I am. Remember how, like, there were, like, signature animations where Kratos would, like, kind of, like, tear people in half, or would, like, take Medusa's heads and, like, just rip them straight off. There's still some of that stuff. Like some of the coolest animations are, like, when you defeat, like, these giant troll or ogre creatures, and Kratos kind of, smashes their jaw and, like, kind of drags it down with his axe. That looks really cool, but, like, I don't know, just, like, the insane over the top violence is not there as much, and that to me was a huge hallmark of what God of War was. I mean, like, it was such a ridiculous, insane action game to me.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. You know, like, part of what really separated God of War from other games was, you know, some of those set piece kind of kills that Kratos would have I just remember, like, whether it was, like, at E3 or Fan Expo or other things, when people would just gather around and then you just see it happen, everybody like, oh, you know, because it would be just so crazy and so wild the way Kratos would do it. Not to say that, like, we're just, like, you know, violence mongers, but that's what really kind of made part
I'm
of
kind of a violence monger.
But you know what I mean? Like, he not only, like, it was all the cool weapons and everything, but just, like, he was so always out for vengeance, and the way he did it was just so crazy. Especially when he would kill, like, you know, those massive elephants. Those are the crazy moments.
And that kind of brings me to another kind of gripe I had with the game. Like there is one boss fight in the game. I won't spoil it, but, like, there's one boss fight in the game that I think is really cool. Every other boss fight in the game just is lackluster to me. And that is weird to me. Like, that is really, really weird, because, like, boss fights, the big set piece boss fights are a huge part of the series.
Yeah.
And this one, wow, they just didn't deliver to me. From a gameplay perspective, I didn't really agree with any of the changes that they made and this includes kind of, like, the game's progression system. Because before, like I said, you'd get EXP to kind of pump into skills, and that's how you'd get stronger with Kratos. now it's tied to like a gear, like almost like an RPG system where you're trying to get upgrade gear, and like this kind of relates to stats, like your attack, your special attack, and your cooldown reduction and things of that nature. It's kind of an interesting concept because it is kind of fun to play dress up with Kratos, but like I don't know, it just didn't vibe with me as well as what the old system was. Now, like with all that said, if you have a PS4, you should probably pick this game up. You will not find a more beautiful looking game on the PlayStation 4 than God of War. They recently added a photo mode, which is really fun. Like you can actually make Kratos smile. Imagine that. Visually, it's phenomenal. From a sound perspective, it's phenomenal. And even like just some other like design choices. This game feels more like a Metroidvania, like a 3D Metroidvania kind of game. You kind of unlock new abilities to kind of go to look for new areas, look for new secrets in the world. And the world is very, very, very big, but as big as it is, it definitely feels like it can be bigger. Like they're definitely teasing for the next iteration of this like Norse mythology God of War, because they kept teasing two specific gods who are very big in the Norse pantheon that never show up. Because essentially, like what the quest actually is for Kratos and his son to just get to the highest mountain in all the nine realms and spread Atreus' mother's ashes, and that's literally what the quest is, and that's literally how it ends. And like depending on who you are, that could be a really beautiful ending, or if you're like me, that's like, is that that's it? That's the ending? Like. Like, come on.
No beautiful, like, lovely, touching endings for you. It's got to end in a bloodbath.
Well, I guess because the so-called final boss just didn't feel like one. I mean, maybe I'm showing my age here, but, like, I really like having, like, an epic, crazy final boss encounters to kind of show me, like, okay, this is the end. This is the final major encounter in this game.
No, fair enough. So what would you give it score-wise, then?
Pretty much every publication is giving this thing a perfect score. As good as the game is and as how much replayability it can potentially has, because there's a lot of extra stuff that you can do where you explore the world and kind of, you can collect a bunch of things and there's that kind of extra challenges. Yeah, I'm going to give the game a 4 out of 5. It's really, really good, but there's too many things that irked me.
So we're kicking off this new show with two very solid 4 out of 5s for PlayStation exclusive games. Mm. Is it a sign of things to come? Probably.
But Christine, you should definitely check out God of War. Like it's much more of a narrative-driven experience. Just from a storytelling perspective, they do really, really smart things, and just like the way they tell their stories, like where like kind of bits of the story are just told by Kratos and Atreus just walking through the environment and stuff like that.
When I tweeted out that I got a PS4, that was across the board the number one recommendation, was to get that game.
Yeah, I think you will enjoy it, because like it seems like everyone that did not like the old God of War games loves this new one.
And Christine, you are heading to E3 in just a few weeks' time, so I'm sure you're pumped for that.
Oh, I certainly am. It's very exciting. First of all, I'm just excited to have a vacation. Second of all, I'm also very excited to see what's being shown off. If they can tell me what Death Stranding is too, I feel like my work will be done.
If you could please come home with the release date for Last of Us 2, that would be amazing.
I will try my best, good sir. So we're going to try and do these shows once a week leading up to E3. And then after the madness of E3 calms down, we think we might go bi-weekly, so every other week. Mm-hmm. Lots of articles already up on the new site if you want to check them out. Anyway, I think that's it for today. So for Momen Qureshi, for Steve Lung, I'm Christine Chubb. I want to say you'll hear from us again, but I don't have a new.
I think we should just keep that going. I think that's a perfectly fine catchphrase. You'll hear from us again.
You'll hear from us maybe next time. Have a lovely week / 2 weeks / whenever. Bye, everybody. Bye.